Flea Red.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Poorly Red.
Yeah, happy birthday.
This is going to be a back to school special episode, even though I hope none of our listeners are actually school children.
I've never considered that. Oh my God. Can you imagine? They're like, Mom, can we put on the podcast in the car? Yeah. She's like, sure, son. Anyway, it's like, dig, dig, dig.
Dick, dick, dick. Ghost scat porn.
And she just like slams on the brakes. Just throws like her coffee on the stereo so it short circuits.
Drives off a canyon.
Yeah, let's hope that's not a thing.
Yeah.
I saw a lady the other day and she was reading Goblet of Fire. And I was
familiar.
Like... It's the fourth book in the series, yeah. And I was so badly wanting to be like, oh. And then I looked at her and I was like, I just can't imagine that she's the type of person who would appreciate this. So I was like, oh, maybe not. Okay, I'll leave it.
Yeah, could difficult. Harry Potter fans, very broad, very...
I know, and I've been surprised at the like variety of people who have actually enjoyed this.
Yeah.
Because I kind of thought it'd be people who sort of are just like me and you, but it's been like a lot of people who I would never expect.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Like,
yeah.
This is really funny.
Yeah.
So I'm like, thanks, I guess. Yeah. I feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah, like, thanks. Are you sure you're not just kind of saying that to be nice and friendly?
Yeah, are you actually getting the jokes? Do you know what we mean when we say dick in my ear? So basically this episode, we're going to be, because it's back to school special.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about some back to school-y things. So Mr. Tom is going to be giving you a nice sort of sneaky peek, I guess, at some of the backgrounds of some of the teachers. And Mr. Gifton is going to be... giving you some information about some of the other wizarding schools around the globe.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Thank you for using our formal titles there.
Right, so Tom, do you want to start us off with your teacher?
So, I'll start with a couple of members of the sort of faculty, I guess. Mm-hmm. Filch was where I started. And everything I looked up about Filch was very much just like, Filch is the caretaker at Hogwarts. He's a grumpy and ill-tempered man with a cat called Mrs. Norris. Like, yeah.
Like, no, yeah. Really?
No. He knows a lot of the secret passageways in Hogwarts, does he? Well. But there's a lot of, most of what's written about Filch is from the community questioning similar things that we have questioned, as in like, why does he have that job? He clearly can't do it and is clearly really unhappy in it.
Yeah.
So like, what's the deal there? But apparently it's sort of, as you learn more about how Hogwarts works and about the house elves that work there,
yeah.
It's suggested that the house elves actually do a lot of the sort of domestic work and that Filch is in a sense like their manager.
Oh my God, that would make so much sense.
Yeah, and so then Filch does complain a lot about having to like mop stuff up, but then maybe that's just because he likes complaining.
Right, wow.
So because the house elves would see the students as like masters, so they need someone, they need a human to be, so they're not just easily manipulated by all the students who they would obey as like part of the house that they work for.
Right, wow. Okay, that does make a lot of sense then, actually.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
Okay, so like, is that okay? So is that like straight from JK or is that from other people?
It's hard to tell. The lines sort of blur because what is like an officially sort of endorsed source. I think that is just kind of extrapolation, like fat community extrapolation from what we know from the books.
I mean, it makes total sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we do know that they like the house elves clean like the common rooms and things like that. So yeah, that makes sense. And they've obviously got magic, which makes it very easy for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and do you know what? Now, when you say that, it's like, it is actually obvious, but it's obvious in a way that we never would have considered, I don't think, because it makes so much fucking sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And so nothing makes sense in this universe, you know?
Yeah. Well, certainly that we would never have considered until the house elves start coming up in the books later in, what, book 4, is it? Or
so maybe we would have, like, had that thought.
Maybe.
When it, like, happens, we would have been like, how do you think Filch is just, like, in charge of them?
Yeah.
Okay. It's weird that that's never mentioned in the books, then.
I think it is just, the community trying to fit the pieces together so they make more sense.
Yeah.
But I think I'm okay with that if it's done in a way that makes sense and that doesn't directly contradict anything.
Yeah, and it makes, and it's actually the most sensible answer.
Yeah, I think so.
Because, like, how else would he do everything? Mm. You know, you just wouldn't. Okay.
And also there's the idea that Dumbledore is somewhat sort of open-minded and charitable towards Squibs, so that he also hires Mrs. Fig.
Yeah.
And so he wants to help give those people, like, roles in the magical community.
But, I mean, because the usual thing is that if you're a Squib, you just sort of have, like, a muggle life and you live in the muggle world.
Yeah.
So why didn't Filch just do that?
Well, because he probably doesn't want to. He wants to be a part of the wizarding world, but there's obviously very few opportunities, and Dumbledore's apparently one of the few people who will be like,
do you think maybe, like, he tried to get along in the muggle world and it just didn't work out?
Maybe.
So when he was, like, maybe, like, on the streets or something, Dumbledore was like, do you know what, come and work at Hogwarts, you'll be able to inflict all the misery that you desire.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll have a legion of, like, subhuman troops at your disposal.
He's like, wow, it's like all my strangest dreams come true. Emphasis on the come.
The only other thing that I thought I'd mention in this bit, because it's not long enough to have its own, like, segment. The only thing I could find about Madame Hooch that I don't think is published in the books is that her first name is Rolanda.
So maybe Madame Hooch is a black woman.
Oh, I was thinking like Southern American redneck. Like, Rolanda, get in here off that broom.
I mean, it wouldn't be Rolanda. It'd be like Rollis. Rollis, you get in here. You take your ass down to the welfare.
Get them yellow eyes out of here.
Wow, that's really unfortunate that there's not more about her.
Yeah, I mean, not more. I basically scrolled through her page on Pottermore and, like, looked through her, like, little Wikia entry and stuff. And it's all just, you know, Madame Hooch is the Quidditch referee and flying instructor at Hogwarts, and just goes through all the stuff that's in the books. Like,
That's such a cop-out.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So, yeah, not... well, there might be, but I couldn't easily find much about her outside of what we already know from the books.
See, this would be a good time for, like, JK to be our special guest. So we could just ask her.
Just sit her in a chair under a bright spotlight.
Yeah. Put her on, like, a lie detector machine. Yeah. Yeah. When she answers, like, she's lying. Yeah. She's like, oh god, okay, her name is not Rolanda, it's Janice. Yeah, I thought so.
Janice Hooch.
Oh, but it has to be, like, alliterative, wouldn't it, really?
Helga.
Like, Helga Hooch.
Or was that, that's already Helga Hufflepuff, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Helen.
Helen Hooch. Hunty Hooch.
Heliothorpe.
Yeah, boy. Oh god.
I'm the first merch line we make, we're making Heliothorpe Buffins merch.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I love it as a name so much.
Okay, so the first magic school we're going to talk about is Wagadoo.
Wagadoo.
Yeah, push pineapple, shake a tree. And and that's the African magic school. So Wagadoo is the largest of all the wizarding schools, and it's carved into the edifice of, like, a mountainside.
Awesome.
And it's, because it's so high up, it's often shrouded in mist, which is a common feature among a lot of the magic schools, actually. And because of that, it kind of looks like it's floating in the sky, which I thought was pretty cool. It's theorized that, much like humanity, that magic originated in Africa. And the, and I've mentioned this before, but the very special thing about Wagadu is that they don't use wands.
Yeah.
Because wands were a European invention. So wizards are, wizards and witches are taught there just to use hand gestures, so either like pointing or waving. And apparently that's their most useful defense against like underage or like accidental magic. They're like, no, I was just waving my hand. I didn't mean to do what, you know. So they're especially, like a lot of the schools have like subjects that they're like stronger at than others, and I didn't write all of them down, but I know that Wagadu is especially adept at self-transfiguration. So there, whereas like being an animagus is quite a rare skill like everywhere else in the world, most students are taught how to do that and are successful at it. So, and there's like almost like conventions for like animagi, and displays are put on, and the Wagadu schools, like all of their like 14-year-old students, can like transform into like elephants and like cheetahs and things like that. And older, more experienced wizards from other places, that doesn't sit right with them,
because
it took them so long to learn how to become what they became. And someone actually filed a complaint with like the ministry, saying that they thought it was like not like an unfair advantage, but they filed a complaint. What was the complaint? I think they just complained about the fact, really, that they could do that. And then it says in brackets that that person's animagi was a gerbil. And I was like, so yeah, that's...
So with animagusing,
yeah,
do the better you are at it, like the more awesome your animal is?
I don't know, because I don't know if these students there can turn into like anything.
Yeah, because traditionally,
a specific animal.
That's it. Yeah, traditionally, you just have one animagus form, don't you?
Yeah. So I just get the feeling that you sort of turn into animals that are probably like native to where you're from and things like that. So
yeah,
all of their ones are probably sort of like
zebras.
Yeah, and things like that, which is obviously more impressive than like a gerbil or, you know, like a fox or something like that.
I think their like start of year ceremony looks like the start of the Lion King.
Oh, that'd be so amazing. Yeah. And their headmaster is like Rafiki,
yeah. And each of the first year students are taking it in turns, like lining up on that like precipice to be like held up for everyone.
Oh god, and by the like end of the fucking ceremony, his arms are just like fucking hell.
Yeah. You're just using magic in the end to like levitate them. If you could smear the red shit on your forehead yourself, that'd be great.
Oh gosh, yes, you go to Hogwarts, get red stuff smeared on you all the time. Be thankful you're here. So one thing that's really cool about the school is that they receive their acceptance like letters, and I'm using air quotes, in a very unique way that no other school does. So when a child is accepted into Wagadu while they're sleeping, don't worry, it doesn't get weird.
Yeah.
A dream messenger comes to them in their dream and Ooh. Tells them, and then gives them a token in their dream. And when the child wakes, they have the token in their hand, and then that's sort of like their like sort of like their coin to like go like to the school.
Oh, that's so much cooler than getting a letter from an owl.
Yeah, can you imagine? Because Harry would have just woken up in the morning and been like, I got a token and an erection. What a lovely day. This piece of wood in my hand is the second hardest thing this morning. Yeah, so that is Wagadu.
Nice. Cool. All right. Well, move on to my next member of the faculty then, Professor Flitwick, Professor Phileas Flitwick. Of course.
Oh, God.
I googled what his first name is, and my eyes were prepared to roll already, because I just knew. There's a theory that he has some goblin ancestry.
That's not surprising.
Yeah, because he's, especially given how he looks in the early films.
Yeah.
Because he looks weird.
He looks like a very old Father Time, you know, like wispy and, or just wispy really.
Yeah, wispy and sort of shriveled.
Yeah, like a prune.
Yeah. J.K. Rowling said that she was surprised at how he looked in those early films.
Really?
Because she sort of just pictured him as like a very small old man. but him, the way he looked in those films has sparked some, again, difficult to tell what has, I think it just began as like fan theory, the goblin ancestry, but I think she has kind of heard that and sort of gone, yeah, all right.
I would not be surprised. Yeah. Oh God. It surprises me that she didn't have, that she didn't like sign off on the looks of the characters.
Yeah.
Because she has like an unprecedented amount of control over the movies. Mm. And so it's a bit like, huh, I would have thought they would have put all this by her and then she would have been
well,
like,
well, maybe they did. Maybe she was surprised, but still just kind of went, okay.
Oh, okay, I guess so, yeah.
And yeah, this article I read has like strengths, charms, weaknesses, none.
Shit, son.
God damn. Apparently he was a very accomplished duelist.
That doesn't surprise me, actually.
Yeah, after he left Hogwarts, he was a dueling champion.
So I guess, like, dueling is like fencing.
Yeah.
Like, you can do, like, you know... Do you think they've got, like, a Wizarding Olympics?
They should, if they don't.
So there's, like, dueling, I guess. There would be, like, gnome throwing. Yeah. Quidditch would be in there, like how football is in the regular Olympics.
Yeah, yeah.
What else would there be?
I don't know. There's not really a lot of like sporting, like athleticism.
Yeah, maybe there'd be like...
Just like broom racing. But then doesn't it just depend who has the fastest broom?
Yeah, yeah, that's a bit shit.
Maybe broomstick like obstacle courses.
Yeah, a bit like dressage, but you just do it on brooms.
Yeah.
Or maybe you do like that on thestrals though. But no one likes thestrals apart from Hagrid, so I guess not.
No one can...
See them.
If you had a traumatic past, you have an advantage.
Everyone has to bring their favourite relative and then they see them get slaughtered in front of them. God, some poor person is like, no, I can't. No. She's the only one left. Like, well, you'll never be a champion.
You trot around those obstacles through your tears. His Patronus just said non-corporeal, which I thought was weird.
That is weird.
Because the Patronus charm is a charm, right?
Yeah.
So you'd have thought he'd be, like, super good at it and have a really well, clearly defined
maybe
one.
Maybe if he's had a really, like, depressing life, maybe he just hasn't got a strong enough happy memory to create an actual form.
Maybe, but, you know, it says, like, his sort of defining characteristic is almost that he's, like, super friendly and happy all the time. Like, he seems to be really, happy in his role at Hogwarts and always positively reinforces the students in ways other teachers don't. Like, he's, when students struggle, he often prefers like extra homework, other punishments rather than the more punitive like detentions and stuff like that.
Maybe his like goblin ancestry stops it from being a thing.
Maybe.
Because maybe like Hagrid can't produce a corporeal one either.
Probably not. I'd be surprised if Hagrid could produce one at all.
Yeah, I imagine his Patronus just sort of tumbling at his wand like a sack of like Lego bricks. Just being like, can't really do much with that, can I?
Build myself a wall. Fend off the Dementor.
Oh my God, Hagrid's Patronus would so beat a cow.
Yeah. Just chewing some like ethereal cud.
Yeah. Doing like fuck all to ward off the things. Yeah. Just like wanders off onto Dementor, the side.
Dementor just sort of. Yeah, it just wanders off. Yeah.
Oh, God, that man.
Yeah, Flitwick's Boggart is Voldemort. Yeah.
Oh, as everyone's is. Yeah, that's such a cop out. Even Voldemort's Boggart is Voldemort.
Really?
Do you know that?
No.
Yeah, a dead Voldemort is his fucking Boggart.
I mean,
that makes sense, but still.
Yeah.
Not everyone's Boggart can be fucking Voldemort.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I bet he's fucking thrilled about that as well.
What, that everyone's Boggart is him? Yeah, that's exactly what he wants, isn't it? Playing right into his hands. Supposedly. Professor Flitwick's favourite drink is, even though I'm pretty sure we see him order like sherry in the books, his favourite drink is cherry syrup and soda with ice and an umbrella.
That sounds amazing.
sounds like it would give you diabetes.
Yeah. Well, I guess wizards don't get diabetes. Because wizards don't get... They can cure themselves of all, like, muggle illnesses. But that's why the only things that are fatal to them are, like, wizarding illnesses, like really severe dragon pox and things like that.
Yeah.
So, like, they don't get cancer and
they
stuff
just
like
have
that.
Like magical control over their blood sugar levels.
Yeah, I guess so.
Syrupus extractus.
Or maybe the spell is just insulin. Yeah. And Slughorn's just like, oh, that's served me well over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. And final thing about Professor Flitwick, which I think is actually in the books, but I'd forgotten. In the final battle at Hogwarts, he kills, I've written Antonio, but I think I actually meant Antonin Dolohov, who had previously killed in duels both Moody and Lupin.
Shit.
So Flitwick's pretty badass.
I feel like everyone is surprisingly like badder.
Yeah.
It's weird because I don't say ass, I say ass, obviously, yeah, no, but yeah. It doesn't sound well if you say badass.
No, like jackass, the TV program. It's not, it's jackass. It's literally the name of the animal.
I might just start saying badass.
Yeah, that's badass.
It's badass. Oh, good. Do you think that, like, badass came from literally, like, an ass that was really bad one day?
Oh, you're a badass.
Yeah, and then, like, the person telling him off was like, "Urgh." But then the person standing next to that person was like, "I like the cut of his jib."
I like the cut of his ass.
I mean, it's like walking around the paddock in a way I don't appreciate, yeah. But I like it as well.
I just think it's the way that, especially in America, they throw the word ass into everything.
Yeah.
That's a big ass tree.
Yeah, I guess so.
You lazy ass son of a bitch. My grown ass man.
Yes, I'm a grown ass man.
Yeah. You're certainly an ass man.
Right, so the second magic skill is Mahutokoro.
Ooh.
Which, as you can guess from my pronunciation, is in Asia. And it's in Japan. It's the smallest of the wizarding skills. And it's kind of unique in that students can attend classes from the age of 7. So when you are that young, you can only attend, I was going to say on an outpatient basis. But I meant like you can only like attend it as like a day school. So you've got to go home. And they... If you're a day student, you fly to and from the school on the back of a giant storm petrel. And I don't know what a petrel is. I don't know if that's like a real bird.
Is it P-E-T-R-Y-L?
No, E-L.
E-L.
Yes, I don't know if that's a real bird that's like magically giant or if it's like a completely made up bird. But they fly to it to and from on the back of that. And I can only picture that as... Do you remember in the Flintstones, like their version of an airplane was just like a giant pterodactyl that they'd all be like sitting on?
Yeah.
Like that's how I'm like imagining it. And so it's set. It's really cool because it's the school is a jade palace and it's set on top of a mountain on a volcanic island, which I thought, well, that was pretty nifty.
Yeah.
So this is where it gets a bit like, you know, JKB, is that... Their robes, they buy one set of robes and their robes grow as they do. And all their robes start off at like a pale pink. And as you, if you get more like learned as you normally would at a school, your robes change colour according to how sort of like good you are at magic.
Mm.
And if you achieve top marks in like your final year, your robes turn gold. But... If you, and this is where I'm like, why wouldn't you just take the fucking robe off? If you start practicing dark magic, your robes start to turn white. And, or if you like repeatedly break the Statue of Secrecy, and to turn white is a disgrace. And you'll be immediately expelled from school and have to face trial at the Japanese Ministry of Magic. And I'm like, well, if you're going to do all that shit, surely you would just, like, not wear the robes anymore?
Yeah.
Or you would just, like... Or you would at least wait until you fucking left school to, like, start practicing the dark arts then.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if you got, like, a very visible indicator of what you're doing...
Yeah, you would just remove that indicator or wait until you no longer had it.
Yeah, exactly. Or you would just enchant the fucking robe so it didn't turn. Like, it seems like such like a backwards thing.
I guess it's a deterrent for people because they're like, well, I can't. I either have to like be the only one not in these robes, which is pretty obvious in itself, or wear it like a big fucking tattoo on my forehead.
Yeah.
So I guess I can't practice dark magic.
But then it's like, I can't imagine anyone's robes ever turning white then.
No.
Because you just wouldn't fucking do it.
No.
Like, I just thought that was a bit bizarre.
But do they keep their robes? Are they like their wizard robes for their life?
I don't know. Because you wouldn't just have one set of fucking robes, you know?
I mean, you got to wash them.
Yeah. I guess they can magically wash them.
Yeah.
I guess you can magically wash yourself as well.
Yeah.
Just like turgio yourself or scourgio.
or just stand and spread your arms out and get a couple of house elves to come and rub you down.
Scrub, scrub here and scrub, scrub yeah. there. I'm trying to think of lyrics to that now.
I recognise it, but I can't think what it's from.
Oh, it's from The Wizard of Oz. It's when all getting like cleaned up and the Tin Man's getting like buffed, I think. The lion
he's getting buffed. He's in the gym. Yes, but when they're preparing to go to the city of or something,
they're in the city of Oz. So the house is like, scrub scrub here and scrub scrub there, we're glad you're not a squib, because if you were we would have to jerk you off, it's glib. And Harry's like, what? I'm like, what, you don't have to jerk off squibs? He's like, no.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, God.
Mrs. Fig even makes us do her cats.
Oh, God. She's just sitting there, like, eating her cake and her tea. Yeah. Sitting on her tumble dryer. Putting it on a spin and watching them jerk off her cats. She's like, oh, let me turn these dials up. Oh, God. So, the Japanese school are fucking amazing at Quidditch.
Of course they are.
They're good at Quidditch and maths. So, basically, a group of Hogwarts students were trying to, like, circumnavigate the globe on, like, a trip. And they got blown off course and they got rescued by students from Mahutokoro. And while they were staying with them, they, like, taught them about Quidditch, and now like that school is like they're the best school Quidditch team in the world.
So what the European students taught the Japanese students Quidditch, right?
Yeah, because I think Quidditch is in British sports, so I don't know if the other like European schools know of Quidditch. I guess they do because Crumb's a Quidditch player, so yeah, but yeah, it's only mentioned for the like the Japanese schools, so they're the best at it. Yeah, and that is Mahutokoro.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Right. Well, I think I might save McGonagall till last because she has an actual published backstory. So I've got a little bit about Pomfrey and a little bit about Moody. Yeah, the only real thing I've got about Madame Pomfrey is that she was appointed as Hogwarts nurse in the same year that Lupin started at Hogwarts and was the one who would escort him to the Whomping Willow.
Ah. Oh.
Each month.
Why did he need escorting?
I don't know.
Maybe he didn't. She just volunteered.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know what
he
I'm
needs
saying?
Me.
Oh, he needs me to escort him. He can't find his way on his own.
I don't know. I guess to make sure nothing, you know, make sure it doesn't trip over any roots.
I guess she likes it when he wolfs out. I bet she likes that moment when he's like in between.
Oh, he looks so sick.
He looks so sick. He's got the head of a wolf, but he's still got the peen of a little boy. Quick, let me take a picture.
Let me administer some ointment.
Ooh, let me just rub this into your perineum.
Ew.
Just imagine it because his fur would get all like matted from it. And the others, when they're all like sort of like animaged out, they all just like stop him and like, does anyone think he looks a bit red down there? Yeah. And then James is like, he's a dog. Of course he's red down there.
Why does James speak like that?
I don't know. Oh, Lupin, even for a dog, you a dog. Wow.
Yeah, and the only other thing I have about Madame Pomfrey is that she killed at least one Death Eater in the final.
I don't believe that for a fucking second.
Yeah.
Maybe she did. Maybe she just, like, stupefied him, took him to the hospital wing. But she's like, I don't know if I'm going to make it out of this night alive, so yeah. I might as well do what I've always wanted to. And he wakes up and his, like, stomach is just, like, open. And it was, like, organs are missing. He's like, fucking hell. She's just like rubbing his kidneys on herself.
Oh my god.
Oh, she's like, sweet greens and kidney beans. Yeah, sorry.
Oh my god, right, composure. And then, yeah, I was trying to look up some stuff about Moody, and he sort of has a backstory, but it's basically just like he was born into a family of auras, and always knew he wanted to be an aura, and tried really hard at school, and did really well at school, and became an aura.
Oh, god.
And he fought for Dumbledore and the Order of the Phoenix during the first Wizarding War, and was obviously known for his, like, ruthless tactics. He would, like, he was pretty frequently sort of getting his wrist slapped at the ministry for, like, just attacking first and asking questions later kind of thing. But he never, like, killed if he could help it, and certainly never used any of the unforgivable curses until Barty Crouch, which is corrected to Barry Crouch.
All right, I'm Barry Crouch.
Barry Crouch, mate. I need some double glazing.
No, thanks. I've got a wand.
Yeah. But did you know during the first war with Voldemort, Barty Crouch made it legal for auras to use unforgivable curses?
Yeah, they talk about that, I think, in book four.
I felt like they might have talked about that in the books, yeah. Yeah, and Moody used one on a Death Eater called Rossier because he elected to fight Moody rather than come quietly. So they dueled and Moody ended up having to kill him with the killing curse.
I always sort of wonder why in a situation, obviously they want to bring him in, but in a regular, like, fighting situation, why everyone just doesn't try and use the killing curse straight away?
Well, I guess not everyone wants to actually kill the person they're fighting.
But if someone's trying to...
If you did, though, then yeah.
But I mean, so if you're fighting... Because most of, like, the duels that we see in the books, they are fights to the death. They're not, like, in, like, law enforcement trying to bring someone in.
Mm.
They're someone trying to attack you to kill you. So you're having to, like, defend yourself. But both parties don't just use the killing curse straight away, even the bad... like person.
Yeah.
She's, I always thought it was a bit weird.
And you know what I noticed about the killing curse in the books? It says that you can't dodge it and you can't counter it, which is not the case in the films because they do counter it all the time.
It's the same in the books as well. So you can't, there's not a defensive spell against it. But in book five, Voldemort fires a killing curse at Dumbledore. And Dumbledore conjures, like, a massive shield, like a metal shield. And, like, the killing curse, like, it, like, makes a massive gong sound as it bounces off of it.
Does it?
So it's like you can create, like, a physical barrier.
Because I pretty distinctly remember reading and thinking that's dumb. You can't block it, counter it, or dodge it.
No, I think you just can't. There's no magical defense against it. So there's no counter curse.
But right.
Because, like, in that same fight, Fawkes swallows the killing curse that Voldemort tries to fire again, and then Fawkes turns into, like, the baby Fawkes again because it dies, obviously.
Yeah.
So I think you can, like, jump out of the way because it's not like a... It's still a spell that has to, like, reach you. It's not like a charm or something. Okay, so Beauxbatons... How would you say that in a French accent?
Beauxbatons. I guess.
Ugh, God. Okay, so they are a school, as you might have guessed. So their school is situated atop a mountain in the Pyrenees.
Ew.
And I had to look up what the Pyrenees was, because I'd heard that word, but I didn't know what it was, but it's like a mountain range that borders, like, is it France and Spain, I want to say?
Yep.
It's one of those countries. It borders Europea. There we go.
I mean, I'm going to say it. At least one of the countries it borders is France.
Yeah. So what's interesting about this school is that it's a castle, but the way it's described, it looks a bit like Versailles. And part of the reason of this is that it was the sort of really lovely renovations to it were funded by the Flamels. So the Flamels, Nicholas and I can't remember his wife's name. I think it begins with a P.
Yeah, me too. But it's not Penelope or like it's not like Persephone or something.
No, I think it's got an E and an R in it.
Percy.
Percy Flamel. Maybe my name is just Per.
Yeah.
Per Flamel. That'd be quite a cool name. Okay, so...
Well, yeah, so they funded it with their infinite gold.
Yeah, so because they met there. So they were students there and they met there. And so they
funded... Oh, are they French then?
Yeah.
Huh.
Which I didn't know. I was like, oh, okay.
So was I, just now.
So, yeah, so they funded it with their alchemist gold. And there's a fountain in the... It says in the park in the school, which gives you an idea of how big this place must be.
Yeah.
That is named after them. And in this fountain, it's said to have healing and beautifying properties. And I'm sort of curious as to... if it does have those properties or if it's just like rumoured to, because surely in a magic school you'd be able to verify whether this fountain did have those properties or not.
Pretty regular access to it.
Yeah, so yeah. I thought I was a bit like, okay. Yeah. So Beauxbatons has... I didn't realise how many times the Triwizard Tournament has actually been played, because Beauxbatons is the second most frequent winner of it, because it's won the tournament 62 times.
The second most frequent winner. There are only three schools in it, though.
No, but what I mean is that Hogwarts is the most frequent winner. Yeah, and that's pretty much it for Beauxbatons.
Cool. French school in the Pyrenees. Yeah. Pyrenees?
Pyrenees.
Pyrenees.
Oh, my God. Pick and mix.
Piss and shit.
Right, so tell me about McGonagall.
All right, Minerva McGonagall. So, and yeah, she actually has like a full... It was like in part of a collection of short stories or whatever that McGonagall's backstory was in. She is a half-blood born to Muggle Robert McGonagall and witch Isabel Ross. And they had a secret relationship because Isabel's parents wouldn't have approved of her dating a Muggle. No. And every year she would tell Robert that she was going off to like an all-girls boarding school, but she was actually going to Hogwarts. Yeah, that was that. And then she finished Hogwarts, married, and then when Minerva was born, she had to tell Robert about, like, you know, who she is and everything. And as Minerva was growing up, she could see the strain that mother being a witch and father being a Muggle was putting on their marriage. Like, he was a reverend and was known for being, like, upholding honest values and was suddenly having to, like, lie to the whole community and everything. And so it was, like, there was a lot of tension in their marriage. But yes, and then, you know, Minerva started showing signs of being a witch and so went off to Hogwarts. And the Sorting Hat spent like over 5 minutes deciding whether Minerva would be Gryffindor or Ravenclaw before putting her in Gryffindor.
Ah.
Yeah. And she met Pomona Sprout at Hogwarts and became like super good friends with her and remained super good friends. And she was also captain of the Quidditch team.
Really?
Yeah.
That explains a lot then.
Yeah, yeah. She got fouled really bad by a Slytherin player in her final year, apparently, and then wasn't really able to play anymore.
Shit.
Which it seems like would have been if it was just a bad foul, it would have been like a physical, therefore
just
like a Muggle injury.
Skelly, just grow, you'd be fine.
Yeah. But yeah, she didn't. Maybe she just chose not to play anymore.
Yeah, maybe.
But then, yeah, she finished Hogwarts and got engaged to a Muggle. Well, she started a relationship with a Muggle called Dougal McGregor.
He put his hand in the biscuits.
He did. He coined the term shortbread. Yes, and then she was fully like in love with him. And then,
oh God, sorry. If you imagine that broken down as in bread, as in like breeding as like a shortbread. Oh, God. Just a quickie in the back of the caravan.
Yeah.
Oh, gross. Sorry. Gross. Carry on.
Yeah, he proposed to her. And she was super happy and she said yes. But then after a couple of days thinking about it, seeing the strain that her parents went through, being a witch and a muggle, she eventually told him that she had changed her mind and then left him to move to London to start working at the ministry, which she did for a long time. And her boss was called Elphinstone Urquhart.
Fuck me.
I know, right? And he comes back later on. She was offered a prestigious promotion at the ministry, but declined it because she, yeah, I guess she just wasn't fulfilled. She sent an owl to Hogwarts inquiring about a teaching position. So she was in London, sent an owl to Hogwarts inquiring about a teaching position, and it said the owl returned within hours. No, it didn't. unless owls can apparate, no, it fucking didn't.
But maybe they can fly faster when they're magic.
Super speed owls.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. All right, well then the owl returned within hours. Round trip, London to Scotland. Hours. Yeah, so she took up a teaching post at Hogwarts. And she, during the first Wizarding War, she was not a member of the Order of the Phoenix for some reason. I can't remember exactly why, but she didn't want to actually become a member of the Order with Dumbledore. But she did help out the ministry quite a lot by spying on known Death Eaters in her Animagus form.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, she spent a lot of time sitting on walls as a cat, spying on people.
Okay.
And her old boss, Elphinstone Urquhart, kept in touch with her and fell in love with her and proposed to her. And she said no because she was still in love with this muggle guy who she couldn't, you know. But she never like really stopped being in love with him, so she kept saying no. And he kept like proposing to her over the years, like like every now and then he kept his, you know, attempts at courtship up with her. But she kept turning him down. And then I think sometime after the first, no, it's during Voldemort's first reign of terror, Dougal, the muggle guy she was in love with, got killed by Death Eaters during a sort of random anti-muggle attack, which obviously like devastated her. But then after that, like a year or so later, the next time Elphinstone proposed to her, she accepted and married him. And so was married, I think, at the start of like when Harry's parents get killed, and in the very start of the first book, she was married, and she would check in on Harry from time to time, apparently, as she was concerned about Harry being left with the Dursleys, and would check in on him from time to time in her Animagus form to check that he was okay. But he obviously wasn't okay. Yay. But she didn't do anything about it. She obviously saw that he was alive and was like, well, he's alive, okay, that's good. And then her husband died of a venomous tentacular bite, and I can't remember exactly what a venomous tentacular is.
So in book six, it's what Slughorn is trying to get from the greenhouse, I think, when Harry stumbles upon him after taking Felix Felicis.
Yeah, that's it.
They're worth a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, her husband died of a venomous tentacular bite, and they had a cottage in Hogsmeade, but she didn't want to stay there after he died, so she moved into Hogwarts.
Ah.
And has been there since.
So was she a teacher during that time that she was married to him?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. She was a teacher from as soon as she left the ministry.
Okay.
Which I think was even before like Voldemort's first sort of uprising.
Right. Okay. Oh, wow. That's really, I mean, I'm glad that she married the guy in the end. It's just sad that he died.
Yeah.
And I guess she was just like, oh, I'm done with this.
Yeah. And she became like really close friends with Dumbledore.
I bet she did. From He's like, put on this moustache and bend over.
He had his share of the shortbread. he was her transfiguration teacher.
Because that's what he taught before he was headmaster, right? Yeah.
And she was obviously super good at transfiguration, and so they became quite close. And then when she became a teacher at Hogwarts, Dumbledore was headmaster by then, I think.
Right.
Okay. And she became the new transfiguration teacher, and they became really good buddies.
Swish. Okay. Oh, that's really sad, actually. It's sad, but it's really good.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for her. I can see it still, but I think that's really good. Her character makes a lot more sense, I think. Not makes more sense, but is, you can understand kind of the way why she's the way she is.
Yeah.
I think based on that. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. little overview there, but you know, full details are published.
By us on our website.
Yeah.
Right, so I'm going to try and really quickly give you the full story of Ilvermorny, which is the North American magic skill.
Yeah.
So, I need to go back to Ireland. And tell you about Isolt. So Isolt was the daughter of this wizarding, like, duo. A mother and a father, believe it or not. And they lived in
classic
like
a duo.
And they lived in a cottage in Ireland. And they were, basically, Isolt's family were some of the original Gaunts. So they were, although she didn't necessarily know this, they were descendants, direct descendants of Salazar Slytherin. So they lived in this village with her parents, and her auntie lived quite close by. And her parents were really good friends with them, with like the Muggles who lived like in the village as well. And they used to like offer them like magical remedies and stuff. This was long before the Statue of Secrecy. And her auntie was like basically just like Salazar. She hated Muggles and all this stuff. So she killed Isolt's parents and then kidnapped Isolt to raise her by herself, so she could raise her to sort of carry on carry on the Gaunt line, but with like full like venom towards other Muggles.
Mm.
And so she used to like teach Isolt dark magic and stuff, but sort of use dark magic to like force Isolt to perform dark magic spells, if that makes sense. But she never allowed Isolt to have her own wand. And she kept her like far away from other villagers, and she used to curse any villager who like strolled too like close to the cottage. And eventually Isolt learned of the truth of what happened to her parents. And when she was old enough, she stole her auntie's wand and fled to England. But her aunt kept on like catching up with her. So Isolt jumped aboard the Mayflower and sailed to the New World. There she met Pocahontas. No, she sailed to Virginia and then
killed the natives.
Yes, with a swish and a flick.
Yeah.
She disguised herself as a boy upon the ship, and because like she was on the ship with a bunch of like Puritans, she knew she couldn't stay in their settlement, so she went to Massachusetts and basically like set up camp in the woods there. And there she met a small being called a Pugwudgie, who she rescued from a creature called a hide behind. And hide behinds, they're like carnivorous beasts, but they're a bit like boggarts, but they can hide behind any object, like anything. So like a pencil, they could hide behind a pencil, which is what makes them so dangerous. And she rescued this Pugwudgie, which is like a sort of like a furry like troll thing. And because she rescued him, he owed her a life debt. And so he like followed her around basically from that point onwards. And he was very like complainy and stuff. And he wouldn't tell her his real name. So she gave him the name of her father, which was William. And then one day she stumbled across this family that were being killed by the same hide behind that had attacked William. And the hide behind had killed the parents, but the two boys were injured but still alive. So she defeated the hide behind. She took the two boys into her like home. It's a very loose term for what she had. And she nursed them back to health, and it turned out the two boys were wizards. And so she sort of like took care of them, and she went back to where the bodies were of their parents to give them a proper burial. And there she found a man who was on the same ship that the family had been on. And he'd buried them himself, because he'd basically gone into the forest to find them, because he'd befriended them on the ship. And he had come across their bodies, basically given them a burial. He picked up, like, he saw like the broken wands on the floor, and he picked one up and like waved it accidentally. And because when Muggles handle wands have a habit of like sort of like rebelling, and so it like threw him across like the glade. And he hit a tree and got hurt, so she rescued him as well, took him back to the cottage, nursed him back to health. She told him that she was a witch and stuff, and he was a bit like oh at first, but they became friends, as you do. And she wanted to build a house out of stone, and he used to be a stonemason back in England, so he helped her build a house. And as often happens in these stories, they started to fall in love. And then she started to, they sort of became like a family with like the two boys. And then at some point, there was a lake near her house that had a serpent in it, and this serpent had a jewel in its forehead, and this, and she didn't know why, but she could understand what the serpent would say, and the serpent kept on saying to her, until I'm part of your family will be doomed. And she never knew what this meant, but it used to say this to her every time she would visit it. During this time, as I was the Pugwudgie she'd befriended, it wouldn't help the boys when she'd found them in the glade, and she was so, like, sort of, like, abhorred by his sort of lack of compassion that she told him to go away, and he vanished, basically. So she never saw him again. Anyway, so they become a family, and then when the boys get old enough, they're like, oh, we would like to learn, like, magic and stuff. And when one of the boys turns 11, she has a dream that she, the horned serpent gives her a bit of his horn. Hey. And so she wakes from the dream, goes down to the lake. The serpent lets her take a shaving from his horn, and she fashions a wand from it. So basically she puts the horn in the core of the wand for the oldest boy, who's just turned 11. And they all sort of, the next day, they all sort of talk about sort of forming like a little makeshift school, and they create different houses because they'd all been told about Hogwarts, because she'd been told about Hogwarts when she was a child by her evil auntie. And so they said, okay, well, what should we name the four houses? And she said, okay, we can name one of them after the horned serpent. The husband were like, well, you've told me a lot about the Pugwudgie you were friends with, so let's call one Pugwudgie. One of the boys liked the story about this mythical bird, not mythical, it was a magical bird called a thunderbird. Do you? Yes.
Did it have strings and a, like,
had a string and a whole bunch of ships? One was, looked a bit like a dog penis, which it did. I think that was Thunderbird One, actually. And then the other one, oh, I can't remember what the fourth one was fucking called. Anyway, they start a magic school, basically, and Native Americans who are wizards started to, like, learn of this school and bring their kids to it. And so the school grew and grew and grew. And then because it grew, the stories of this school started to spread across the land. And her evil auntie heard about this. So she's like, ha-ha, if you know where you are, you bitch.
Yeah.
So she gets upon a ship and sails to the New World, finds the school. And she approaches the school, which by this point has sort of grown into like a massive manor house. And she says in parcel tongue, sleep. And the wand that Isolde had stole turns out was actually Salazar Slytherin's wand. And you could command this wand to go to sleep, and so it wouldn't work anymore.
Where had she stolen that wand from again?
From her evil auntie. When she
before she left, right?
Yeah, and so she does. So the wand becomes dormant, and then the evil auntie puts Isolde and the husband into an enchanted sleep. She doesn't know about the boys, so the boys had been dreaming of this attack happening. So where they like look out the window and they see her approaching the house. So they go outside and fight. The twins, the girl twins that she'd given birth to, Isolde, they start screaming, and that wakes Isolde and her husband from the enchanted slumber that they were in. Isolde goes out to fight. The woman, like, forces them back into the house and goes to steal the twin girls, because she's like, well, I can steal these and raise them to be proper gaunts. And without realising what she's doing, Isolde screams out, William, because it's the name of her dad. It's also the name that she gave to the Pugwudgie. Mm. The Pugwudgie comes back, and it raises one of its poison arrows and shoots the evil auntie through the heart, and the evil auntie dies. And then Isolde, knowing that her wand, well, she can't wake her wand up from its like slumber, so they plant it in the garden. And from that tree, from that spot, like a tree blossoms that has like medicinal properties. The Pugwudgie agrees to like stay at the school from this point onwards to like be sort of like a handyman, sort of like a filch. And this school at this point, after that, it grows into a castle. Like, obviously, Isolde dies at some point. Her and her husband both lived until 100 years old. But obviously, James was the husband. He's a muggle. He dies. She dies. And because he was a muggle and they founded this school, this is the most tolerant of the magic schools.
Mm.
And so students who go to this school, they step into the entryway, and there's four like carvings on the wall of the serpent, the Pugwudgie, the Thunderbird, and whatever the fourth thing was.
Wampus?
W-A-M-P-U-S. Maybe, I think it was, yeah.
I just Googled it.
Oh. So whichever house wants you, like an aspect of them glows or moves, and the minister of the Makuza in America, the Ministry of Magic in America, when she attended the school, all four of them like lit up or moved for her, which rarely happens. That was like super special. So you can choose which house you want at that point. And you get given your wand when you arrive at the school, and you can't take your wand with you on when you leave for the summer. And so, which obviously is actually pretty good because it stops like underage magic happening a lot of the time. So you only get to take it with you when you finally leave when you're 17. And the Pugwaji is still there, but he says it's not him who was there originally, but he always goes and lays flowers at his aunt's tomb every year on her birthday. And no one knows how long a Pugwaji actually lives for. So they reckon it's him still. It's still William, but they're not. He's never confirmed it. And the Pugwaji like descendants, they all like grumble about how much they hate working there, but none of them ever leave. And yeah, so that was the first magic school in North America.
Wow.
And that is Ilvermorny.
Ilvermorny.
Yeah.
What do we know why the Pugwaji initially wouldn't help the two young boys that they found?
Oh, because Pugwajis hate humans.
Oh.
Under any circumstance, so muggles and magic people alike. And he only stayed with Isolde because she'd saved his life, so he owed her a life debt.
Oh, I see.
So he was like really reluctant. So that's why he didn't want to save the boys' lives. And she was just like, oh, do you know what? Fuck off then. I think it's disgusting, which is understandable.
Fair enough, yeah.
But yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Just before we finish, because we've only got a couple minutes, but did you read anything up about the magic quill and book in Hogwarts?
No.
Okay, so the book and the quill that select the students, they're in a tower in Hogwarts, and there's a quill in a pot, and then there's a book, and both of them are independent of each other, right? So the quill, whenever it detects a child that shows any sign of magic, it rises up out of the pot it's in. The pot has no ink, and the quill is made of a bird feather that repels ink, so no one knows what the fluid is that it writes in. But the book only allows names to be written in it once they've shown undisputable signs of magic when they're like older. So the quill might rise up out of the pot as soon as it detects any kind of magic, and the book sometimes just snaps shut. So the quill rose out of the pot when Neville was born, because Neville made his blankets like fit a bit tighter around him, and he was like first born. But the book wasn't convinced, so the book snapped shut before it could write Neville's name in.
Wise book.
Yeah, right. and the book, and because of like the combination of the two, they're like infallible, basically. Like a squib has never been accidentally invited. Because sometimes a squib baby, when it's first born, can carry like residual magic from its mother.
Yeah.
And that takes a little while to wear off sometimes. And sometimes like headmasters and stuff have sat in that tower waiting for like someone's name to be written down so they can observe it for like hours and hours and hours, and like nothing's ever happened. So it's really rare that you can actually see like the pen like writing in the book. So yeah, the founders put it there as like enchanted objects.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, guys, we hope you've enjoyed this special Christmas episode of Poorly Read. Please visit us on Instagram at Poorly Read Pod. Email us at poorlyread@gmail.com. Please log into Apple Podcasts and rate and review us. It really helps us like reach more people. So do it if you haven't done it already, you bastards. And I've been Gifton.
I've been Tom.
And Hagrid has been Hagrid. Where's that cow come from?